and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 703. I'm Lisa Sheps. I'm joined today by my marvelous co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You were listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this live at koop.org. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Wunderschön ist in Paris auf der Rue Madeleine. Schön ist es in meinem Rom.
It is Wednesday, January 11th, 2023. On the show today, we have Jarrett Productions and their show, The Sound Inside. And later on, we'll be talking to Scriptworks and Hyde Park Theater and talking about this year's Frontera Fest. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, London, Chicago, and West Texas. Stick around. So ever since I did the International Folk Bazaar, I can't help but play songs that are in different languages.
I know. I love that you introduced the guest as Frontera Fest. It was very Better Off Dead of you, like French fries and French dressing.
Well, I like French dressing.
But you said Frontera Fest. That made me smile.
Nicole, hello.
Hello.
How you be right now?
Well, I'm alive. I got stung by a bee. And I'm highly allergic, I'm here.
Well, but you got your EpiPen,
EpiPen, but now it's red and not doing good today, so we may have to go to the doctor, but I'm alive, people.
Well, honey, you're okay. Well, welcome to another week. Let's introduce the folks that are sitting here with us so that we can continue the conversation. We have Will Douglas. Welcome back, Will.
Thank you very much. Glad
everybody,
to be here.
Everybody here, by the way, is a veteran of the program. David Jarrett.
Hello, hello.
And Rebecca Robinson. Hello. Oh, wait, I'm going to turn your microphone on.
Oh, yeah, you need a mic.
Hello.
So good to see you.
Oh, my gosh. I like the pose and the dramatic effect as she went into. It's very Sunset Boulevard in that. Hello.
So I need to say, did anybody recognize what that song is from? And Nicole, you can't say anything because you have it written down on your piece of paper.
Okay.
No.
Anybody? No. Well, it's called, I'll tell you, it's called the suitcase song, Ich hab noch ein Koffer in Berlin. Does that help? Does it give me, it doesn't do anything for you?
It's catchy.
It's from Indecent. The play is in the news this week.
Yep.
I will also say that Austin Playhouse is doing it.
This season.
Right. This season. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to do it pre-COVID, and they're doing it. But I want to just, before we talk about why it's in the news, well, we'll talk about why it's in this, I'm going to let the source talk about it themselves. Let's listen to this.
Okay.
That's not it.
It's on there. You'll make it happen.
It's there. Okay.
This is the magic of live radio.
Try that again.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Madeline, and up until tonight, I was playing the ingenue in our high school production of Indecent. Tonight, during rehearsal, our company was notified that the school board is shutting us down, not because of, but related to the ideals stated in the Don't Say Gay bill. Indecent is a story about how detrimental censorship is, about how its damaging effects can ruin a nation and a community. I don't need to point out the irony. The 100-year anniversary of Sholem Ash's The God of Vengeance being shut down on Broadway is the same week that our production of Indecent would have opened. 100 years. 100 years, and we are still fighting the same injustices that Sholem Ash and his company did. Indecent is about the purity of love, the strength within a community, and the shallowness of those who try to silence identity. Indecent is also a queer Jewish love story put on by a company composed of Jewish people, of queer people, of activists, and of the descendants of Sholem Ash. They are trying to tell us that this play is dirty, immoral, obscene, and of course indecent. And by that nature, they are trying to tell me that I myself and my community is dirty, immoral, obscene, and indecent. And I don't have a reason.
So that was a student from a Douglas Anderson High School, which is an arts school in Florida, talking about the school's pulling the production of Indecent after they had already approved it, and basically saying because of the Don't Say Gay rule, it was done. The principal of the school, Tina Wilson, cited that a closer review of the mature content of Indecent led them to the conclusion that The Seagull is better suited for the school production. Of course, they have done in the past productions of Chicago and Rent. Both have, you know, questionable moral, well, depends on who you talk to about questionable moral.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But adult themes, basically, to them. I just, you know, we hear about this so often, and just in today's environment, to censor such a beautiful piece. And Indecent is one of the more beautiful stories
Indeed.
I've seen. The Broadway show was absolutely breathtaking and amazing, and it tells the true story of the production, the Yiddish production of God of, oh my God, what's it, what is it, God of Carnage, God of Vengeance, which had the very first lesbian same-sex kiss on stage. It played in Eastern Europe, and then it moved to the Lower East Side and the Yiddish theaters in New York back in the 1920s. It then transferred to Broadway, where it was then closed down for being indecent. And it's just... one of the things that I thought was very interesting, Paula Vogel, who wrote it, got involved in it, and she tweeted, I might have been Instagram, I'm not sure. What
she posted.
She posted, I send my support to you and all the artists. Hate and intolerance are indecent. Never love. Thanks for your courage. This will not end here. Then she went on and she did tweet to the school's leadership. She said, Dear Principal Tina Wilson, Superintendent Diana Green, as a teacher and administrator for 40 years, I know that it's not easy. But why cancel Indecent rather than structuring post-play discussions? It is a unique way to look at the Holocaust as well as gender and censorship and antisemitism. What a field day for education. I believe your students are young artists who can more than handle the conversation. It would be great for parents, too. And I'm more than willing to come in and be part of the conversation.
Wow.
Wouldn't that sound great? Get that microphone up to you.
Wow.
I love her.
Great response.
Yeah.
Great response.
That it's amazing, but that's true. By the way, in order for these kids to have been in it, they had to have signed parental. They all had signed.
I was about to say, didn't the parents sign?
Like, they did.
There was a whole
schmoo
yes.
about the approval of this. And how wonderfully articulate and yes. thoughtful for Paula Vogel to say, you're missing an opportunity rather than look at this.
How Absolutely. Wonderfully articulate was that student?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. She was amazing. That's why I had to play it.
God.
It showed up on my TikTok.
Oh, you love your TikTok.
I love my TikTok.
Lisa does just, love her
There
TikTok.
She was. She showed up there.
She's like, Lisa Sheps, this is for you.
Yeah. They are also trying to find, I'm sure they will. I don't know what the current situation is, but Paula Vogel and other prominent artists in the country said, let's find a venue in Florida for them to put this on.
Love
That's
it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And you know they will.
I was like,
darn it, if they were here... I have a venue.
I feel like there's a few theaters there that would be remiss if they did not say hello.
It just disappoints me to no end. I mean, I know we're preaching to the choir here. By the way, I should say this. The opinions. What's the opinions? Thank you. The opinions expressed on offstage and on the air are not those of this radio station, the board of directors, or staff, but merely our own ideas of what we think. Just know that. But I think that this kind of censorship, indeed it is censorship, is... It's just, we just miss an opportunity to talk to our kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about the same thing around the Drag Queen Story Hour. It's a perfect opportunity to say, hey, let's talk about what just happened, what you saw. It's a great opportunity to have mindful conversations with your children, but some people simply don't want that. They would rather...
Mindful, meaningful conversations. Like,
what a concept.
I miss those. I long for those. I'm always big... Yeah, we have a lot of those, Lisa. Thank gosh I still have you.
And I don't know if y'all remember or saw, I want to say it was in like, might have been 10 years ago, McCallum, they pulled, they were supposed to do Rent and they pulled it.
It was The Rent, yes.
Yeah. And then...
And wasn't even The Rent Junior? Wasn't even like one?
It was Rent. It was the high school Rent. But you know what? There's not much. They only cut one number.
It's just that one number.
And they get rid of the F-bombs. But it wasn't... The school didn't cancel it. They canceled the funding. And it was another organization giving the funding. And then everybody rallied, gave them the money. And it sold out all the time. I was there. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing show.
I think what's funny is by them canceling this play too, all it does is make everybody pick it up and read it and get into it. It did absolutely, even without performances happening, did complete opposite of what they wanted to do by, and I put in air quotes, shielding the community.
I did want to talk about that.
Maybe that was a Jedi mind trick. I just, I didn't realize it was. What do I know?
I will tell those that are interested in this show, the Austin Playhouse live version is coming soon. I believe the Broadway professionally taped version, which is what I saw, is still available on Broadway HD.
I believe it is on the HD.
And that has Katrina Link. And
But you're going to come over and watch me because we have to watch Billy Crystal.
Okay. You got it? Yeah. Okay. I will watch Indecent over and over and over again. It's a beautiful story and directed with such amazement by Rachel Chaifkin. Chaifkin, I can never pronounce her name. But the whole time I'm watching it, I'm going, I would have never made that choice. Meaning, I wouldn't have thought of that choice.
Yeah, in a good way.
I felt terrible. So that's that. Let's talk about artistic directors, shall we?
Let's.
There was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle. By the way, all these articles and things are linked on offstageonair.com, so you can see them. The article is by Lily Janiak. Its title is Theater Traditional Role of Artistic Director Becoming Obsolete? And they're just talking about a lot of theater.
I hope not.
It is, David. You and I are dinosaurs.
Well, yes, but I was there first.
As were dinosaurs.
As a dinosaur.
But they just go through a lot of examples of artistic directors, especially long-standing, what is it when you create something? The founder-driven artistic directors, as they leave, they're finding either situations that they'll bring in. They talked about in the first part of this article, they talked about the Marin Shakespeare Company, and Robert Currier, a self-described old white guy, left so that a person of color could take over, and they hired... Uh-oh, my thing just went away. And I don't know where it went.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, me too. they hired... what's his name?
A nice gentleman.
Ralph Raphael Massey, who left just after 3.5 months, citing unspecific reasons, but saying he couldn't make it work under the current circumstances. And what this article goes on to say is so many companies are choosing to do a more replacing that one artistic director with like four or five other
with
people.
Other positions. Yeah, with multiple positions to kind of cross over realms.
Yep. In the Alter Theater, those roles were director of new play development, a producing artistic director, a literary committee, and a business manager. So a lot of companies are opting for this and calling a shared leadership collective. What do y'all think about that?
I love working with committees.
Do you?
No.
Yes, the deadpan face. Yeah, too bad we didn't have the videos on
that
for that one.
That was in my head, but I didn't say it out loud.
Yeah. Oh, leadership by committee is crazy. Yeah. But that doesn't sound like what they're doing. They're having to share different roles for different things.
And I think that's fine. I mean, yeah. Not everybody's an expert on everything.
Correct.
No, but I feel like these should be positions you should have had or
anyways.
Been held yeah. or had committees yeah. running them in the first place, that yeah. there are all these different things right. to collectively get with it. So I don't know.
Some companies are also doing a no official artistic director, but having guest artistic directors or curators of seasons and doing that and changing them year by year. That's
potato.
Potato, potato.
Yeah.
But I mean, we are in a time, we've talked about this a lot on this show, where we're trying to be much more equitable in terms of not only the shows that we produce, but the people that work on our shows. And part of that is shaking it up a little bit.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All for it.
Yep. Okay. Well, there you go. Speaking of diversity, there's another article in the New York Times, the newspaper of record, about ASL and diversity in American Sign Language. And they were talking specifically about Roundabout Theater's production of a soldier's play. And they have, who here knows as it refers to ASL, the term dazzle? You probably do, Nicole.
We just had a whole conversation on this yesterday. That's
but I'm not
so
talking
funny.
To you. Who else knows about dazzles?
Not me.
Okay.
Not
so it. Nicole obviously knows it because she's working on Cinderella over at the ZAC. We had dazzles in both Next to Normal.
I knew it from before then, but we were explaining right. dazzles to people yesterday.
And the last 5 years. Dazzle stands for a director of artistic sign language. Mm. And so ASL... unto itself isn't necessarily, when you're talking about sign singing or doing something artistic, it doesn't necessarily translate one-to-one yeah. in terms of what you want to get out artistically right. and creatively. So the dazzle is the go-between the ASL interpreter in some cases or ASL artist in cases like Cinderella and my stuff. To
Kaylin, who's mentioned in that article, is dazzle for Cinderella.
Cool.
Along with Leilani, mm-hmm. who's local. It's really very interesting. And then we take it to another level. We're talking about diverse ASL. So I didn't even know this existed, that there is Black American Sign Language.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, which evidently no is more, it's, I don't know if the actual signs are different, but it's more emotive uh-huh. and it uses your body more. Then I mean I'm taking this in context from
the article.
This piece.
Yeah.
And so they're also the dazzle is responsible for actually working in deaf culture, and in this case, on a soldier's play, Black deaf culture, and all of these things make things so interesting and
wow.
intricate.
Cool. Yeah.
This is a great article. I should say the article is written by Ilaria Perogni. Pierogi. I like pierogies.
She makes me I just was about to go, she made me want a pierogi now.
And it is entitled How These Sign Language Experts Are Bringing More Diversity to Theater. They talked about the lawsuit that we talked about here at The Lion King, where a white ASL interpreter was hired, and then subsequently asked to not do it because of it would be more appropriate for a black interpreter to do the work, and he signed he sued for racial discrimination. They didn't go to trial, but they settled. So we don't know what it was, but they talked to this woman, Patrice Creamer, who
it was
is,
Disney. It was The Lion King. So yes, Rebecca, the Dal Harris going.
Money was.
Who is the current dazzle for The Lion King. She was not, by the way, named in the lawsuit the guy. I'm going to read this.
But there's a new verse in Hakuna Matata.
So this is a quote from that article. Having deaf people whose first language is ASL working in an artistic sign language direction brings a whole other perspective, a deaf one, to a production. Michelle Banks, a black actress, director, and writer who is deaf, said through an interpreter. Dazzles can also have a say in hiring and can choose interpreters who are a better fit for characters, the cultural represented, and the chosen signing style. So I think... That's interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, we're hearing a lot about ASL and deaf actors and things like that. And certainly there's a lot of stuff going on nationwide. And we'll mention it once again that Zach is currently in rehearsals for Cinderella, which is opening in a few weeks. That is both a deaf and hearing cast. So that's great. We just have we really don't have any time. I will say this. Stomp is closed.
Yep.
After 30 years, 28
years.
End
of an era.
End of an era.
Really was.
And that's pretty amazing. There's a wonderful article you can read. There's also a new group called the League of Live Streamed Theaters. This is really amazing. I really wanted to talk about this. Maybe we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, let's talk about this next week for sure. I know it is cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Beetlejuice. Let's talk about
I'm surprised you picked that on the over other stuff on there.
Well, because I'm playing something from Beetlejuice and we've got to stop.
There you go.
So Beetlejuice closed on Sunday. Alex Brightman, who we talked about on this show, got a concussion. They talked about how he got the concussion in this article, which I didn't know before. He had to make an exit.
Yeah.
He ran into the worm.
Yeah.
That worm?
I hate when that happens.
He got a concussion.
I think
that's kind of funny.
But it's kind of funny. You and I were just talking about injuring ourselves during a performance, remember?
During the holidays. We did indeed. So anyway, they had their last performance. Alex Brightman was able to perform the last three, I think, performances. And...
record numbers.
They had interviews with him that you can read at offstageonair.com and the New York Times. What I loved about him, he was not heroically going on to the show at the cost of his own health. Mm-hmm. He is one that says, my health is more important than the show. If I'm not healthy, I'm not going to go. So,
because he had already made the comment, I may not be there for the final week of shows when this happened. And he's like, but go and enjoy and you'll love the other people you see. He did not expect to be back.
So quickly, Beetlejuice had just a very interesting ride. It opened in 2019 to poor reviews. And then it got sort of a cult following. But in the meantime,
it closed, then it
opened. No. It was asked to leave because
of Music Man. And Music Jackman, Man,
thank you.
Son
that's what I was
Foster,
trying to remember.
To go into the Winter Garden.
To go into the Winter Garden. And
then there was the scramble to find the set to fit in the other theater, which didn't work.
Yeah, but this other thing happened called COVID-19, and everything shut down. And then they opened again in 2022.
Two. Because mm-hmm. They had 2 years to figure out how the set could fit into another theater.
There you go. All right. Let's take a break. Let's listen to a little bit of Beetlejuice. This is the whole being dead thing.
The whole being dead thing. Death can't
we are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and...
Nicole.
And...
Will.
And...
David.
And...
Rebecca.
I just love doing that. It's so much fun. That was great discussion. I should say I do love that song because of the meta-ness of it. It's a song sung directly to the audience of that Broadway theater after they spent $1 zillion to see
like
this show.
$50 one.
Yep. So great. Well, let's talk about stuff going on here locally, which is why we have Jarrett Productions here in their production of The Sound Inside, opening this Friday night. And we have from the production the artistic director and director of this piece, Mr. David Jarrett.
That's me.
We have Will Douglas, who is producer,
the associate artistic director,
associate artistic director,
And
something
associate
else.
Producer
and
props
and
actor general awesomeness.
And we have one of the performers and a regular Austin icon in the acting scene here in Austin, Texas, Rebecca Robinson.
Hello.
And
hi,
I
Rebecca.
Should say for pure transparency, Rebecca was in the first show that I directed in Austin, Texas.
That has a special place in my heart.
It's true.
Me too. Sound Inside.
The Sound Inside.
So tell us about it.
It's by Pulitzer Prize nominee Adam Rapp, brother of Anthony. And it also stars in our production, Tucker Shepherd. I worked with Tucker and Rebecca in the fall of 2019 in a Joshua Harmon play called Admissions, and it was so awesome working with them, and I also worked with the late Jenny Underwood in that show.
Yes, we are going to talk about Jenny in the next segment.
I wanted to work with everybody in that room again, particularly wanted to work with Rebecca and Tucker, and later that fall... That winter, I saw this show, The Sound Inside, on Broadway, and I went, now I know.
Tell us about the show.
The show is it's a very interesting show because it not only breaks the fourth wall, it kind of shatters it. It's very presentational. It's very representational. It ostensibly, and I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but ostensibly deals with a brilliant Ivy League writing professor played by Rebecca and a talented yet, as they say, mysterious student played by Tucker. And everybody has a story, and we at Jarrett Productions consider ourselves storytellers. And so the story to this, story of anything, is always my first consideration. And this is such an interesting story. And it seems to me all the progress that we make and all the things that we have working for us and sometimes against us in this world in which we live now, that what we're missing the most, I think, is connections with other mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And this is so much about two people who are so desperate to make a connection with anyone. And as it turns out, they make a connection with each other. And it's also about listening to, for want of a better word, and there are no better words, the sound inside of all of us, listening to what that sound tells us about our life's possibilities. And there's some interesting questions that arise in this play, and I think it's going to be one of those plays that people are going to be talking about for a long time.
Sounds like it. I mean, it's an amazing piece, and it won a Tony Award for...
Mary Louise Parker.
I wanted to say Mary Beth Peel, and I knew that was wrong.
Oh.
Mary Louise Parker.
Rebecca is our Mary Louise Parker.
Well, yes, and she will win Tony Award as well. Will or David, this was originally done set to be done prior to the pandemic.
Like most people, we're playing catch up still.
You're playing catch up. Was there a reason why you wanted to do it at that? You know, why is it? Why does Jarrett Productions want to do this story now?
Other than because we had already planned on doing it?
Well, I sort of, yes, that's why I sort of mentioned that I guess you should say.
As I said, I think even as timely as it might have been in 2020 when it was originally planned, everything that's happened since then has just made us more and more wanting of I'm not saying this very eloquently, connections.
That was very
because
eloquent.
We've been so isolated for the past 3 years. So I think it's even more timely now than it was then.
So Rebecca, you are going to do a boy. I wish the cameras were rolling.
That was hilarious.
You're going to be doing a piece of this, are you not?
Yeah, this is the first of the show. Bella Baird, Rebecca's character, comes right out on stage and starts talking to the audience and gives a little bit of description of herself and where she is and why she is.
Okay, I guess that was a setup that I was about to ask you for after I spoke to Rebecca, but we'll just roll with it. Yep. So this is Rebecca Robinson doing a scene from Jarrett Productions' production of The Sound Inside.
Autumn's in New Haven, where the temperature drops so fast, it's as if God is hoarding something, as if he's keeping a piece of this world for himself. Yes, my God is a man. He's selfish and smokes a pipe and looks like a perverted 18th century French novelist. My God has gamey breath and gout. My God is basically Honoré de Balzac. So this is now, right now. It's the late fall. There has been early snow, nearly a foot of it, in fact. Records have been broken. One barely remembers the leaves changing. I'm standing in the center of the New Haven Green, a public park near campus. It is very cold. There is no wind. The naked trees look palsied and arthritic. It's that hour of the night when even the most mundane objects seem to possess thought. A guilt-ridden park bench, the serpentine wickedness hiding in a lost scarf. That lamppost over there knows more about me than most of my students. I come to this park when I can't sleep. I talk things out. I use long, heavily embroidered figurative sentences, the kind of sentences I urge my students to avoid. In this park, I'm a creative writing hypocrite. I imagine my purple prose evaporating in the cold air above me, thousands of words disappearing. My name is Bella Lee Baird. I'm 53 years old. I was born at St. Francis Hospital in Evanston, Illinois. I am healthy. I eat a low-fat, high-fiber diet. I've never smoked cigarettes. Over the years, I've occasionally enjoyed various forms of marijuana, but I don't abuse it. Aside from a bottle of red wine now and then, I've never been much of a drinker. I do own a 30-year-old single malt scotch, and I do eat meat, but only a few times a month, and exclusively the 6-ounce filet over at Jack's Bar and Steakhouse on College Street. I've never so much as suffered a broken bone. I have no children, and I've never been married. Like many single, self-possessed women who've managed to find solid footing in the slippery foothills of higher education, I've been accused of being a lesbian and a witch and a maker of Bulgarian cheese and a collector of cat calendars.
Lovely. I like the Bulgarian cheese part. There's so much of that, unfortunately, I relate to, except only eating meat once in a while. Amazing. So how is this? We were talking yesterday at the theater, and I should say, just as a side note, this set is beautiful.
Thank you.
Who designed the set?
Zane Baird.
Zane Baird. It's
he's new to the theater world. He's done a lot of film work.
Lovely.
It's really cool.
It's beautiful. How has this process been for you so far, Rebecca? I mean, this is from everything I've heard about it, and not only are the descriptions online. But everything is rather vague, but everybody says the same things. This is a heavy piece of theater.
It is, but it's so beautiful, and it reads like poetry almost. There's a certain cadence to it, and I don't know. It's just, it's beautiful the way it's written. I love saying these words, and
that's important.
Yeah. That helps. Right? Yeah. No, but I've really enjoyed it.
Well, who are some of the other the design people, some of the other people you want to highlight here?
Let's see. Our costume designer is Aaron Flynn.
Yay.
Our lighting designer is Allison Lewis. Our technical director is Dimitri Bellini. Who am I missing, David?
Our sound designer is Craig Brock, assisted by Rod Simonson, and also Avery Lynch, who is new to us, and she's delightful. She studies at Oberlin College, and she's doing this show for us. And, of course, our production stage manager is a...
How could I miss her?
Is a Lee. Yeah.
And Lil Bartholomew is
also. Lil Bartholomew
does the projections.
I think that's probably covered the water.
Yeah.
Should be everyone.
Amazing. When does this show open?
We open this Friday,
the
January 13th.
What could go wrong?
At Ground Floor Theater.
At Ground Floor Theater. And when do you close?
We close on January 28th.
Wonderful. And where can folks go to get more information?
People can find more information as well as tickets at www.jarrettproductions.com.
And I should say that, you know, in our day of COVID, you know, many of us, most of the time, we don't really have understudies because we always have such a short run. But you have employed two understudies that will get their own performances, correct?
That's right. Leo Pratt and Helen Marino are doing a brilliant job understudying, and they have their own dedicated performances as well.
Great. And they can find information about that.
Yep, that's on our website.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming. I will say that as you had talked about Jenny Underwood, in our next section, we're going to take some time to talk about her. So if you want to stick around and lend your voices, we would love to have you. That was Indeed. David Jarrett, Rebecca Robinson, and Will Douglas of Jarrett Productions, production of The Sound Inside. For more information, January 13th through 28th at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, you may visit jarrettproductions.com. And interestingly enough, this song, Call Me Professor, is from The Monster of Phantom Lake, which we had never played before until last week at this very time.
And now you're playing it again.
It's another song.
Synchronicity. An academic life.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On Air with Lisa and Nicole and a whole group of other folks.
A bunch of fun people.
And this is the time where we talk about local stuff.
Yes.
But before we get into like the nuts and bolts of what's going on, I want to take some time to talk about, celebrate, and mourn the loss of Jenny Underwood. And before I do that, let me just say that we have some other people that came in here, and let me introduce them. We have Bernadette Nason.
Hello.
You got to do that into the microphone.
Hello.
And then Christy Moore.
Howdy.
And Ken Webster.
Hello.
Welcome. So we lost Jenny Underwood, who has, I try not to overuse the word, but I don't think it's overused in this case, an icon in our Austin theater community. She died about 2 days ago.
January the 6th,
much to the shock of all of us. So I never got the chance to work with her, but I've known both her and Karen John Bond, her wife, through my time here in Austin, and they've been nothing but lovely.
Always kind.
But I just wanted to open this up to anybody here that wants to say anything about Jenny. And I know for my part, she'll be missed. I always a smile on her face
always.
Whenever I saw her.
Always. Yeah. That's special, too.
Today is her birthday. Yeah. Would have been her birthday, her 75th.
That's my Uncle Bob's birthday, too. Good birthday.
It's a good birthday.
Well, happy birthday, Jenny.
And we used to celebrate it every year with a January birthday club, the annual general meeting of, and no work was ever done, obviously, because we were at Chazy and drinking wine. but I have photos of each of the birthdays going back, and it was always a wonderful occasion, because how can you fail when you've got Karen and Jenny at a, you know, at a birthday function, a birthday party. Yeah,
exactly. She never performed at Ground Floor Theater, but I know she performed at Hyde Park.
Yes. Yeah, she was. She's been in Frontera Fest. And there was a time when we were going to do a production of The Beauty Queen of Lean Ann, and she was going to play Mag Folin. And we had some dates that she couldn't do. I can't remember what year it was. And then we had some alternate dates, and then she had a vacation planned. So we never wound up doing The Beauty Queen of Lean Ann. And I'm very sorry that we never got to do it, because she would have been... She's done that play before, but it's such a great role for her.
Yeah, and I don't do social media very well, but I've been trolling the social media accounts after her death, because everybody's posting these amazing photographs. I didn't see a bad one in a lot, and they were all very different. She's so expressive in so many different ways. And I just found that amazing, and it just took me back. I forgot the last thing I saw her perform in, which is a while ago, I'm pretty sure. But I remember just how amazing she was and how forceful of a presence she was on stage.
I think Alabaster, I think Alabaster was her last performance, where she played a goat. In Shrewd Productions, of that show, of that, and that was what, 20, maybe early 2020 or late 2019. It was the last thing that she did.
Well, I know you worked with her.
I did once, but one of the best experiences on stage. I think anybody who's acted with her can tell you she was one of the most giving of scene partners. And yeah,
what show was that?
4,000 Miles with different stages. Uh-huh. She played my grandmother, and I will always think of her as a grandmother as well.
And she was always fun in the dressing rooms, too.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Rebecca's in the back. Yes. Rebecca seems like she maybe has share on air story.
Okay. Rebecca, you worked with her, though.
Yeah.
We can't hear you, but she either come to a microphone or I'll translate.
You can get mine if you want.
Yeah, I did one of my first plays in Austin back in 1997 with Jenny, All My Sons. With Norman in different stages. Yeah, amazing. It was just a wonderful experience. And she was just, I had never met anyone like her. She's just amazing. She took me under her wing, and she was just so nurturing and hilarious.
And I think most people called her Mama Jenny.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
And just such a wicked sense of humor.
Amazing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, she'll be missed. Jenny, you will always have a space on our stages here in Austin, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of sadness. But we were lucky to have her here. And so that's it. If I had a cocktail, which I know a lot of people were drinking a specific cocktail, I think.
Yes, Manhattan. She liked her Manhattans. Mm-hmm.
We'd
also be in trouble for doing that in studio.
We would. We'd get fired.
We'd get fired for being in the studio with a cocktail.
Yep. Yeah. So I should say locally, a couple of things are coming up. We're just starting to ramp up after the holidays. The Latino Comedy Project is doing something really fun. It's called Gentra.
Boo.
And I can't say the second word. It's on the 19th through the 28th. And of course, I did not write down where it's.
I believe I saw it on the Now Playing Austin. And
it is. You
ATX
can find
Theater.
It on Now Playing Austin. But I did do
save
it.
Save the page.
I did save the page. It's got a great picture of a person with a mustache and beard and not a mustache and beard all at the same time. And it is 2 weekends only, and it is at the Boyd Vance Theater in the Carver Museum, which I just learned at the ATX Theater meeting that the Boyd Vance is going through a year's renovation. They're fixing the fly system and something else.
Making it pretty.
But that means we were, in terms of city properties, we were losing for a time the Mexican-American Cultural Center and the Boyd Vance Theater. I did not know about the Boyd Vance Theater. But you can get information about this show at Now Playing Austin or atxtheater.com or latinocomedyproject.com.
Dun, dun, dun.
We've mentioned it here, and we're going to have them on the show at some point. Cinderella over at Zach is February 25th through March
January
5th.
25th.
What did I say, February?
Because
that's what I wrote.
Oh. Well, you had the 25th, right?
I have it going from February to March. So you might want to tell Dave Stakely he's got to move it.
right on that.
Playing right now is Ride the Wave over the Vortex, which opens this weekend and plays through the 28th. We just talked to the Sound Inside there this weekend, playing also through the 28th. Frontera Fest, we're just going to talk about. Pretty Woman over at the Broadway Across Texas.
Bass Concert Hall.
Bass Concert Hall
Texas
is playing
Performing
the 17th
Arts.
Through the 22nd. And then also Austin Repertory Theater at St. Michael's is a new theater company for the school. They're evidently doing a repertory company at the school. They're doing a production of The Miracle Worker, January 14th through the 29th.
And there's also the stage reading of Austin Shakespeare this weekend with Master Harold and the Boys.
And I would say that...
That's being done in the new Draylen Mason studio.
I would say that... Yeah, I know. And I would say that the... if Mark Puhey's in this. I saw him perform this play 15 years ago out at Sam Bass. And it's amazing. The play's amazing. He's amazing. So
Mark rocks. I know. So it's
so
a
worth
little...
seeing. You can get information for that at austinshakespeare.org. Okay. Today in theater history.
Today stuff happened. Tell me about
it. That's
true.
We're going to start with the birthdays. Max von Essen.
Oh, Max von Essen.
Crystalline Lloyd. I'm going to blast through these because we're late. Tamika Lawrence and Amanda Peet, Mary Rogers, and
it's an eclectic group of folks.
Eva Leglion. I don't know who that is, but it's a black and white picture.
Leglion.
Pacific Overtures opened in 1976. Mm? James Joyce's The Dead. I don't remember this. It opened in 2000.
No, I don't remember that either.
John Lithgow's Stories by Heart, which I do remember because it was just in 2018. And I had forgotten all about this. This is a Jerry Herman show called The Grand Tour, starring Joel Grey. It opened in 1979.
Oh, my goodness. I was like, that's some Joel Grey. Yes.
It's some Joel Grey. And we'll hear a little bit of that.
Why hasn't anyone revisited it?
I don't know, but I may. It's actually kind of timely. It's it's a Jewish story.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying that.
Yeah. So well, let's listen to Mrs. S. L. Jacobowski from The Grand Tour. Here it is.
See that lovely lady in the living room, lighting up the evening with her
youthful. We are back. Bloom. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air. We're going to jump right into this next section because we are running out of time. Frontera Fest is the 28th year, I believe.
Yes, it started 30 years ago, but there was a little hiccup over the last couple of years. So we're doing the 28th Frontera Fest.
It's fantastical.
It is fantastical. So we have here the co-producers of Frontera Fest from Hyde Park Theater, Ken Webster.
Hello.
And from Scriptworks, Christy Moore.
Howdy.
And then Bernadette Mason is here, and she's going to be performing one of her pieces. What day are you performing?
February the 1st. Wednesday, February the 1st.
That's my favorite day.
It's mine, too.
Yeah.
And I'm just doing a little bit from it. Just a little tiny bit from it.
For
well,
us.
Well, yes, of course. You don't want to do the whole thing.
No.
That's crazy. No, when I said you were doing something, I was meaning in Frontera Fest.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant, no.
No. So I know we want to just jump right into, well, just before we jump into Bernadette, somebody tell folks that don't know,
What is Frontera Fest?
It's a 5 weeks long performance festival that happens usually every year in January and February. There are this year there are two components to the festival: the short fringe for pieces 25 minutes or less that runs every week of the festival, Tuesday through Saturday, and every Saturday is the best of the week, and the last week is the best of the fest. So there's a little bit of a competitive aspect to that. We also have two bring your own venue shows running this year.
Ooh.
One at the Vortex called "How to Be an Ethical Slut." Ooh. Intriguing. And also one at the Hillside Pharmacy, which is called Flood of Spirits, and it's a seance.
Lovely.
Interesting.
Well, that's cool. So as we talked, you know, it's a series of short pieces that people around the city, and it's such a mainstay of our theater community here in Austin, and we've missed it for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
Bernadette, you're going to do a little piece from your bigger piece.
I am, and before I do it, I want to say that I first performed in Frontera Fest in 1994.
Oh, I wasn't even born then.
Monica Bustamante piece, and since then, I've done, I think this is my 10th time.
Oh, that's, I was about to say, how many have you done? 10,
sure
I love it.
This is the 10th, and I've done Long Fringe and Short Fringe, and but this is Short Fringe. If there were Long Fringe,
we're going to talk
about
that.
I would be doing Long Fringe, and hopefully another year we'll get to do that.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Christy and Ken are just
do you
like,
want to
mm-hmm.
do you need to set this piece up in any way?
No. I'm going to go straight in and people can use their imaginations.
Okay. Well, let's hear Bernadette Nason from her piece entitled...
Old Hage Wins the Day.
Which is part of Frontera Fest, short French.
My first brief encounter with racial intolerance was when I was in my 20s and lived in Tripoli, the capital city of Libya. I worked for an Italian oil company. The communities I mixed with in Tripoli were mostly British, Italian, and local Libyan Arab. We pretty much got along, though the Europeans rarely mixed with the locals socially, discouraged as we were from learning Arabic. Two managers I worked with regularly were Mr. Baluza and Mr. Safsaf. Baluza was from a Tripoli family. Safsaf was Sudanese and had settled in Tripoli. Baluza was a man of little education, a big, burly character, whose many friends made frequent visits to his office. Safsaf was a slightly built, mild-mannered man, university-educated in England. No one visited his office, as far as I could tell. In fact, he appeared to be disliked by most of the Libyans working with us. I could never see any reason for this. He was charming and likable, easy to talk to and always helpful. I liked him. One day, Baluza was particularly rude to Safsaf right in front of me, and I was horrified. Why, I asked my Italian boss later, was Mr. Safsaf so despised? My boss looked at me as if I were an idiot. Because he's black, he said quietly. So is Mr. Baluza, I retorted. My boss whispered in my ear, no, Baluza is brown, Safsaf is black. I had never noticed this before, but now I thought about it, I realized it was true. You have to be taught to hate, right? But Baluza's a bully, I said, and Safsaf is nice. My boss shrugged. That's just the way it is, he said.
Ugh, you need to be carefully taught.
Yeah. Well, if I was singing it, that's what I would have said. If I was singing it.
That's an amazing piece, the little piece we heard. And of course, folks can hear the whole thing by going to Frontera Fest on February 1st. Now, Bernadette's piece is obviously a solo performance, but not everybody does solo performances. What kind of other performances can someone see at Frontera Fest?
Historically, there have been all kinds of crazy things. Isn't that right,
Kristen? That is right, Ken. Bernadette is one of four Scriptworks commissions that's appearing in this year's festival. Every Wednesday night, there's a Scriptworks commission, which predates our involvement in the festival, actually. We started doing those in 1999, I want to say. But anyway. It's a open panoply of performance.
Oh, I like
we
that.
We invite anything, right? That people want to do pretty much. As long as it's legal, no one gets hurt.
25 minutes or less.
Those are good rules. Nice.
Exactly. So, I mean, this year we've got some dance. We've got some great music. We've got a lot of projectors coming. I'm not exactly sure what all those projectors are going to be showing, like some slides, some films, some I don't know what else.
Atmosphere.
We do have a lot of solo work this year, and we've got plays as well, of course, short plays, excerpts from plays, different kinds of stuff. But we've had everything from a cooking show. We have had a dog act. We've had magic, of course.
Did you have tap dancing one year?
Yeah, we've had tap dancing. Yeah. We've had all different kinds of dance, basically almost any kind of dance you can imagine.
Amazing. I had the honor of being an adjudicator for 1 week, and it was amazing. And you had said, I remember the very first time you guys were on the show, probably 14 years ago, because that's how long we've been on, that you said, you know, if you don't like what you're seeing, just wait a little bit.
Yeah, I always tell people, if you don't like it, it's almost over. And if you like it, it's almost over. So you're in luck either way.
That's great. And I know we've only got about 2 minutes left, and I know that we did not get the Long Fringe this year. Are there plans to bring it back next year?
We hope to. We're going to see how this pandemic thing shakes out. We're very excited to be back after a 2-year hiatus.
I was excited when I saw it. I was all like, woo!
I actually felt like this was the turning point for Austin Theater. Frontera Fest is back.
It's for
I think
real.
You might be right.
We're back. Yes.
Well, this morning I went through, I scrolled through all the offerings. It looks like a lot of fun.
It does. I agree, Lisa.
And one of my favorite things about it, I've been involved in all of them since 1993. I'm very lucky. But every year, it's always a great combination of brand new people doing stuff and old hands trying out new material, and it's a really great mix, usually every night, and you never know what you'll see. In fact, we like to say, expect the unexpected.
Wonderful. And the first night is when?
January 17th, Tuesday.
And the last night is when?
February 18th, Saturday.
Wonderful. Where can folks go to get more information?
HydeParkTheater.org. Awesome. It has all the information, descriptions of shows, and how to proceed.
Wonderful. Go ahead.
Yeah, we also want to say we have a new sponsor this year that we're very grateful for, actually thanks to Bernadette, the Texas Folklore Society. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Is a new sponsor this year, and we're very excited to have them. They have their stamp of approval.
Great. Well,
that's cool.
Thank you all for coming on the show. I can't wait to see some of the stuff.
Thanks for having us.
Great. Well, that was Christy Moore, Ken Webster, and Bernadette Nason of Scriptworks and Hyde Park Theater's Frontera Fest, playing from the 17th to the 18th. Said the 18th, from January 17th to February 18th at Hyde Park Theater. For more information, HydeParkTheater.org. And we're not playing them out because we just have to say goodbye.
Well, we could say au revoir.
We could say our revoir.
So long, farewell. See, we sang about.
Sang goodbye.
See?
Okay. Well,
see, you got everyone.
We did it. So stand by for Austin Common Radio Hour. Rock and Roll George is subbing in for John Hoffner again.
Yes, yes.
And we will see y'all again next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. And this is from the concept album of Kin. It's called Anything Everything. The show is in the UK. It says, think Stranger Things meets Big Blood Brothers meets Hadestown.
It's a very odd but dark and intriguing combination.
Okay, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Is there anything or anyone else in this world I can lose? Would anyone care if I finally choose to leave? How am I still here? Am I really alive?